In accordance with the provisions of Uniform Rule 51, I turn the gavel over to the President of the Senate, the Honorable Ben Stevens.
Thank you. The joint session will come to order. The purpose of the joint session is to hear an address by the Honorable Senator Lisa Murkowski. Senator Gary Stevens.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call of the Senate be waived and all members be shown as present.
Without objection, the roll call be waived and all members shown as present. Senator, Representative Coghill.
Thank you. Mr. President, I also move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call of the House be waived and all members be shown present.
Without objection, roll call of the House will be waived. All members be shown as present. Would Representative Ledoux and Senator Davis please escort Senator Murkowski to the chamber? Pleasure to welcome today the Honorable Lisa Murkowski, United States Senator. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you all, Mr. President, Mr. Speaker. It's nice to be able to look at my friends and colleagues and call you Mr. President, Mr. Speaker. And to all of you, my friends and colleagues, it's great to be back here in Juneau. It's great to be here in these chambers again. As I was walking in, you know, you look at the pages. And when I was here in the legislature, I always like to have the conversation with the pages to find out who these young people were. And every now and again, you've got the opportunity for the guest pages. And those of you that were here when I was here know that I was always so incredibly proud when my sons came and were pages. And they would wear these blue jackets that were way below their wrists, looking totally out of sorts and very awkward. And I was so proud, and I embarrassed them mightily. And you will all be amazed to know that that one young man whose arm stuck out to here is now about 6 foot. He wears a size 12 shoe. And he's eaten me out of house and home. And I love it. And I love it. And one of these days he's going to be back here serving as a page. But the day that we've got Hannah and Shannon and who's the other little one that's... It's around Conrad. I saw him at the airport the other day. The day that these guys are pages, we're all in trouble. Let's talk about what's been going on back in Washington. The 109th Congress has been an exceptionally busy Congress already. We've been working on some legislative reforms that have really been pending for quite some time. Class action reform, the bankruptcy, update of the bankruptcy code, things that have been hanging for a long period of time. And when you think about those things that have been pending for a long period of time, how about that Anwar vote? How about that Anwar vote? March 16th was a really big day for us in Alaska. It was the first time that the Senate has passed Anwar legislation in 10 years. And I've been talking with many of you in the hallway, and I understand that perhaps some of your legislative business was put on hold as you were watching the vote that morning. And people were saying, we didn't know what was happening, we couldn't tell what the vote was, and it was pretty tense. Well, I can tell you, it was pretty tense for us in Washington, too. I did feel better when I walked onto the floor that morning and I saw Senator Stevens wearing his Hulk tie. I knew that we were in it for the money. I'm still trying to figure out what my action figure role is going to be. We're still working on that one. I'm serving on a new committee in the Senate this year, the Foreign Relations Committee, and it's a good place to be. We've always bragged here in Alaska about our strategic global position, and now I get a chance to make my point with the world's policymakers. So I'm really looking forward to the opportunity to promote the trade between Alaska and our Pacific partners and to enhance, to really raise that level of cooperation among our Arctic nations. The President had said earlier this year that the United States is committed to defeating terrorism abroad and helping democracy thrive. And we know, we have seen tangible results with successful efforts in the Ukraine, Afghanistan, Palestine, and Iraq. I don't think that any of us will forget the images of the Iraqi people on that election day. I had visited Israel in early January and saw the same faces of optimism in the Palestinians as they participated in their first election in almost a decade. From supporting democracy in the Middle East to aiding in the aftermath of the recent tsunami, Alaskans are contributing above and beyond the call of duty, which is something that we have always done and done very well. It's been 2 years since the war on terror brought nearly 3,000 Alaskans to the Middle East as part of Operation Enduring Freedom. Our contribution continues today with over 3,800 active duty military, reservists, and National Guard members from Alaska who are deployed overseas. By the end of this year, we are going to see nearly 5,000 who are based here in Alaska deployed. I don't forget for a moment the brave men and women who are serving our country. We are honored, we are grateful for their service and for their sacrifice. Now, Alaska's contribution to making the world a better place go far beyond our tenure as a state. We're a young state. We always say that. We've got enormous geography and a developing infrastructure. And because of this, over the decades, we have built a reliance on the federal government. Now, I'm not suggesting to any of you that you should be limiting your trips back to Washington, D.C. in the spring. But we have to recognize that our federal dependency is a reality that we've got to consider. And as Congress works to reduce the federal deficit, and we face competing funding priorities, we must recognize that the federal government will play less of a role in Alaska's budget in the years to come. Now, let me be clear about this. I'm not suggesting that Alaska now has to go it alone. There's always been, and there will continue to be, an important role for the federal government in Alaska. There are obligations to our citizens as Americans, and there's important work to be done in the state that is appropriately done at the federal level. But we are entering a different phase, a different era. There will continue to be budget obstacles, and at almost 50 years old as a state, we're not quite as young as we think we are. I know, I was born just before statehood, and believe me, I'm not getting any younger. It is fair to re-examine our federal-state relationship. And this re-examination is not a bad thing, because we've got plenty of opportunity. We have the opportunity to effect real change for our future through the growth and expansion of our resources, a chance for real ownership of our future, to direct the state where we choose. And I believe that our opportunity begins with our resources. And when I say this, I'm not just speaking to the oil, to the gas, to the timber, the minerals, or the fish. I'm also talking about our human resources, our kids and our grandkids. The question that we have to answer is how to create a state for our children that's better than what we know today. The future that we want will be funded in part by our resources, and I'm hopeful that a portion of that will be from ANWR. Let's talk a little bit about ANWR and where we are. 2 weeks ago, the Senate passed its version of the budget, a budget that contains expected revenue from development in ANWR. a budget that should pave the way to finally opening the 1002 area to responsible oil and gas exploration and development. This is the first victory. The day that we voted for ANWR, the Senate was kind of in its own version of March Madness. And instead of the brackets that you have in March Madness and getting down to the final four, our brackets were 48, 49, 50. Since that vote, we've been able to breathe just a little bit easier, but the tournament is really far from over. We still have to pass a budget. And ANWR, notwithstanding, the House and the Senate disagree on several very significant issues that could prevent a budget from passing. And if the budget does not pass, we do not have those ANWR provisions. And that's why it is so important that we let people in the lower 48 know that a majority of Alaskans want to see ANWR open, and that when it comes to balancing development with care for our environment, we do it right. We need to reach out to those senators who supported our efforts. We need to thank them. I have been telling Alaskans in the week and a half that I've been back home, contact those that stood with Alaska on this issue. The two senators from Hawaii, Senator Akaka, Senator Inouye, Senator Landrieu from Louisiana, Senator Arlen Specter from Pennsylvania, Senator Martinez from Florida. These folks stood by us, took a lot of heat. And I will tell you that they are hearing from those who are opposed to opening ANWR. So we need to give them whatever reassurance we can. I would also urge you as a legislature to support pro-ANWR groups like Arctic Power. For too long, ANWR opponents have owned the public relations market on this issue. They've been able to misinform and perhaps distort our intentions for the coastal plain. We should support the pro-ANWR groups that are working to set the record straight. I also urge the industry to raise their voice and make sure that their interest in ANWR is known. Now, ANWR opponents say that you can't have responsible development on the coastal plain, but we know that that's not true. We can have a healthy balance between production and conservation, between development and concern for the world that we're developing. We work hard to strike this balance in Alaska, and I believe that for years to come, Alaska will continue to be the example by which other states measure their progress. Now, taking ownership of our future means taking the lead and having the vision to examine important and sometimes potentially global issues like climate change. Like it or not, we have to recognize that climate change is real and we see it in Alaska. We see it with the coastal erosion. We're seeing it with the tree migration, the tree line advancing northward. We're seeing it with insect infestation. Now, without knowing with absolute certainty what has brought about the changes in our environment, my conversations with scientists in Alaska have convinced me that human contributions are at least a portion of that challenge. I'm also convinced that human efforts can be part of that solution as well. Earlier this month, I co-sponsored legislation that offers a comprehensive approach to climate change. This legislation encourages the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions through economic incentives, industrial competition, and governmental cooperation without creating burdensome and unrealistic goals that will harm our economy. So we've got incentives, competition, cooperation, distinctly American solutions to this inherently global problem. Now, my focus in these past months in Congress has been on ANWR and a national energy policy. And I know that many of you in this room are very focused, very intimately involved with natural gas. For all of us know that the construction of a natural gas line will allow us to take even greater ownership of our future. We must realize the potential that a gas line will bring, and we must do it with some urgency. Now, last year, I spoke to you about our work to pass fiscal tax incentives to encourage gas line construction. And Ted and Don and I were successful in delivering those incentives last October. Now, I understand the position that you are in. I clearly do. No one wants the state to rush into a project without ensuring the benefits to Alaskans. That is our obligation here. But we also need to remember, Congress is looking to Alaska to get a project started. America needs our gas, and Congress believes that tax dollars should provide incentives to build a line. All of the projections, all of the modeling that is out there, the Gas Association reports, you talk to the economists, everybody is looking to Alaska's gas to come into the mix by 2014. This is not just an Alaska project, but a project for America. And it's time to act on the faith that the Congress and the country have given the state. I think it's fair to say that it is not in the best interests of the state, or the producers for that matter, to wait indefinitely for a deal on the gas line. I told you that all the modeling says we're factoring Alaska gas in by 2014. Without our gas, without Alaska's gas, the U.S. will be faced with importing an additional 25 billion cubic feet of natural gas a day by the year 2025. That's 25 billion cubic feet that must be imported from overseas. And I can assure you that at this moment, they're building the tankers in East Asia and in the Pacific to carry the natural gas that the U.S. will need. Now, with the ANWR argument, we have argued that we must do what we can to lessen our dependence on foreign oil. We must do the same with our gas supply by building the line. Now, I don't have to remind any of you here the effect a tight energy supply and $55 a barrel oil can have on Alaska's consumers and businesses. We see this in Fairbanks. I was talking with my sister after the winter there and the high price of home heating fuel up in Fairbanks. Reggie, I've been up in some of the villages and talking to the folks there about the price of diesel to get them through the winter. And it's just hammering people. And I saw Tom earlier and Mike Chenault, the folks down on the Kenai, as you're trying to hold the Agrium situation together. We recognize that the pieces of the puzzle are here and they're in front of us. ANWR's oil potential, Alaska natural gas flowing through a pipeline, harnessing of our gas hydrates, a subject that has great opportunity and potential out there. The continued development of our coal and mineral deposits. Any one of these would have a significant impact on our state and on the country, but together they allow us to take important steps towards really determining our own future. Our resources serve two objectives. First, they fulfill our role as one of 50 states that share in the responsibility of advancing our country. Alaska oil and gas, someday our gas hydrates, provide our country with secure and sustainable energy resources. We advance as a country because of the unique contributions of each one of the states, and Alaska's contribution to energy security is through domestic production. Secondly, our resources serve the objective of lessening our reliance on federal funds and providing financial security for the state. These resources are an opportunity to create long-term, local, and sustainable funding streams. These allow us to realistically approach the state's fiscal needs from year to year, including quality health care and education initiatives. Moving to the education side of it, I want to applaud you and thank you for your move to add $70 million to education funding. We're investing in our greatest resource, our young people, and that can't be overestimated. We have to do more in this state to raise our graduation rates, increase the number of Alaskans that go on to college. We have to do more to provide for the job training for those who choose not to go to college and as we develop our skilled workforce. Because when we unlock the resources, when we diversify the economy, the Alaskans have to be trained and ready to fill those jobs. Now, raising the bar in education at all levels continues to be a local and national priority, certainly a very personal priority as my kids are still halfway through the system. And we recognize that No Child Left Behind has presented its share of challenges as well as opportunities in Alaska. We've made some headway. In 2003, 43.7% of our schools made adequate yearly progress. We raised that percentage to 58.8 in 2004. We've made some strides in closing the achievement gap among different minority groups. And I am committed to the promise of No Child Left Behind, but I do recognize that we have far to go to deliver on that promise. Now, I've extended an invitation to the new Secretary of Education to come up to Alaska so that she can see firsthand the achievements that our educators are making every day, but also to see those challenges that still face us. We were successful when Secretary Page came up and kind of opening his eyes to the situation here in the state. We need to do the same with Secretary Spillings. Now, in order to take real ownership of the future, a well-educated Alaska also has to be a healthy Alaska. And we have some terribly troubling health statistics in this state. You look at the reports about the increasing level of obesity amongst our young people. We have a fetal alcohol syndrome ratio that is so far above the national average. The suicide rate, particularly amongst our young men. The high number of uninsured and underinsured in this state. At both the state and the federal level, we have to do more to ensure that all Alaskans receive quality health care. Now, in my conversations just this morning, I've had several discussions with you about the federal Medicaid assistance percentage, the FMAP funding. In the Congress this year, slowing the growth of Medicaid will be one of the toughest issues, if not the toughest issue, we consider as we work to pass a budget. And we know that here in Alaska, appropriate federal Medicaid funding is critical to us to help us deal with the high cost of health care. We've got 20% of Alaskans who are eligible for Medicaid coverage. This is significantly higher than the national average of 12%. Currently, Alaska has a federal match rate of 57.5%, which helps us offset the highest health care costs in the country. This FMAP, though, is due to sunset in October. And if it does, we stand to lose millions of dollars in health care dollars. Now, what's happening with the House and the Senate on this issue? We're quite at odds on what we're going to do in our respective budget as it relates to Medicaid funding. I have been working with the chairman of the Finance Committee, as has Senator Stevens. We're working with Chairman Grassley to obtain an extension of Alaska's FMAP funds for a minimum of 2 years. And this is not going to be an easy task, but as you know, it has huge ramifications for us. So this is what we're working towards. And in light of the overall budget restraints, this will be a significant commitment to Alaska. So we will continue to work that. Now, another issue that is equally contentious as Medicaid is that of Social Security reform. And this has always been a very dangerous topic. And in an environment as partisan as Washington, D.C. is now, even beginning the debate over reform requires additional strength. Now, I liken it to some of the conversations we had 4 years ago about the need for a fiscal policy. There were some who said, oh, you know, we're not over the cliff yet. We've got a lot of time. We don't need to deal with it now. I wanted to deal with it then. They're saying the same thing about Social Security. We got plenty of time. We don't need to deal with it now. I believe we need to start talking about Social Security and how we are going to ensure that it is there for the long haul. We need to start the debate and act while we do have the luxury of time. We've got baby boomers retiring. The demographics of Social Security are changing. This program, when it was begun in 1935, has changed, not because the program has changed, but because Americans have changed. You've got 47% of the workforce now that is made up of women. The average American lives to age 77. When we first started this out, average life expectancy was 61. These are statistics that few would question, but societal changes that nonetheless require adjustments. And as important as Social Security is for retired workers, it's meaningful as a safety net for families, especially our lower and middle-income families. Social Security often makes the difference when a single breadwinner's wages are cut off, whether by retirement, disability, or death. Alaska has 60,860 Social Security beneficiaries. We are the first in the nation in terms of beneficiaries who are children. We're the seventh in the nation when it comes to beneficiaries who receive survivor's payments. So we need to make sure that the safety net of Social Security is insured. Future changes will be necessary to strengthen the long-term health program and guarantee benefits to future retirees. Now, yesterday I was in Anchorage and we held a forum on Social Security at the University of Alaska Anchorage. It was interesting, not so much in what we learned, but what we didn't learn about Social Security. There was no consensus on the issue. And what really came out, in my mind, was that Social Security means different things to different people. Some regard it as the source of their retirement, the sole source of their retirement. Others have grown up expecting that at the most it will only supplement their finances. So while we didn't achieve any consensus on specific reform, there was good, strong discussion, and that's what needs to happen all over the country. All options for reform need to be on the table. We need to be talking about everything. Members of Congress are now submitting their ideas, submitting their plans, and we need to hear from you as well, from you and from your constituents, as to how we move forward to live up to our role as legislators and our obligation as parents. We cannot let uncertainty be the only thing certain about our children's future. So I welcome your ideas. I've asked Alaskans, send me your thoughts. Let me know. Now, I'm looking at the clock, and I think I've already developed a short history of taking too much of your time out of your busy schedule. And I had tried to keep it a little bit shorter than before. I think maybe I have by a couple minutes. I've tried not to give you a laundry list of accomplishments or a laundry list of the things that are happening on our calendar, but instead to focus on a few of those resources that can enhance our position as a state. We've got to recognize the time to embrace responsibility is now. Through the power of our resources, the power of our people, we can take ownership of our future. Time for leadership, the time for cooperation, the time for real change, and how we determine our course is now. And I look forward to continuing our good work together. Thank you all for the good work that you do for the state of Alaska. Thank you.
There'll be some hard questions, huh?
Thank you. The senator has agreed to answer some questions.
I do that, Mr. President, there are a few individuals in the audience that I would be remiss if I didn't introduce. I have my chief of staff with me on his first trip to Alaska. Mr. Tom Daffron is in the gallery, the Taylor Gallery. Tom wants you to stand so that they can know who to bug after this. Tom comes to me after about 25 years of Hill experience as chief of staff for other senators. Elliot Bundy is my press secretary, and of course, Connie McKenzie is my local person on the ground here in Juneau. And certainly can't get away without introducing my father, your governor, Frank Murkowski. Okay, now let's take those questions.
Thank you. First, the stand was Senator Cabby, then we'll do Representative Wilson.
I'm glad to hear on the phone. I have always had an interest in that. In fact, I went with your father and your mother back in the 80s over to Asia on some issues that was working. I've known your father and your mother for a very long time. We have some similarities. I got a new knee last year, and he has had just a little work on his. He's recovering faster than me, although I can go up and downstairs now. But anyway, I think he'll be running here for too long. His is improving pretty good, I think. Anyway, the question I'd like to ask you is about, I've always had an interest in the Kanikinarm Crossing and transportation issues, and I know that that's a big issue to Alaska, and your comments on the federal availability of funds.
Well, we are moving forward with, I think, reasonable speed in getting a federal highway bill, the highway reauthorization legislation, through the Congress. The House passed its version out just before the recess here. I think most of you have probably seen that it included some substantial funding for the state of Alaska and some specific projects. On the Senate side, we have passed out of committee just last week our version of the transportation bill. It is an agreed-to number between the House, the Senate, and the administration. So we believe we will have greater success than we had in the last Congress when we were not able to move it out because of an impasse with the numbers. So we're pretty optimistic at this point that we will take the transportation bill up when we get back in early April. It will then go to conference. I expect the conference to last several months. We may see a bill out as early as before the August break, but it may go longer than that. But there is, I think it's fair to say, a great deal of commitment on both sides to push and get the highway reauthorization bill through the Congress. So we'll keep moving it.
Representative Wilson. Thank you, Mr. President. Lisa, I have many constituents, and there are many Alaskans across the state that have paid both into Social Security and then maybe gotten a different job and have paid into the state retirement system, and with the Social Security in trouble. Is there any chance that maybe some of that, we wouldn't have to take that deduction for Social Security?
You're talking about the famous WEP and GPO. And I will tell you, when I got back to Washington a couple years ago, I received more mail from Alaskans on the issue of the WEP, the windfall elimination provision, and the GPO, and a concern by Alaskans saying, wait a minute, I paid into a system, now I'm a firefighter or I'm a state employee, and there's an offset to my Social Security. How is this reasonable? How is it fair? Alaska's not the only state that is affected. There are 17 states that are in this situation. California is one of them. So, I mean, big population states. It is not an easy fix. It is a very expensive fix. But we have been looking at it and trying to work some legislation that can be viable, because the equities just simply do not make sense that we continue with the windfall elimination as it is and the GPO as it is. It is unfair to those who have gone to another system. I view our efforts with Social Security now, this is going to be the one shot that we have to really dig into Social Security. I'm looking at the WEP provisions and how we can work to make a fix. I don't know what it will look like, but that's something that Alaska, along with these 16 other states, we've got to find some equity there. What else is out there? Oh, you guys are.
Senator.
Harry.
Oops. Go ahead. Mr. Crawford, Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. President. I applaud you for all the good work you're doing on the energy front. It's things that should have been done for a long time. It's high time that we get them done. But one thing I didn't hear you mention was alternative energy research and development. Alaska has more potential in that field than anybody else. We have unparalleled resources that we can turn into hydrogen and ship around the world. And like Wayne Gretzky said, you know, we should always skate to where the puck's going to be, not where the puck is. So I was just wanting to bring that up and see what's on the future.
It's a great comment, and you're absolutely right. You are absolutely right. We have more potential here for renewables, for alternatives, than you can count. There's actually going to be a conference in Anchorage, I believe it's next Tuesday. Commonwealth North is hosting the forum on renewables. We have been focused in the Energy Committee. We started off with a review of LNG, and we had a coal conference, but we're now moving our conferences to the area of renewables. We're going to have a conference on tidal power. As you know, here in this state, we've got tidal, we've got geothermal, we have hydro, we have unlimited wind power. And we can, here in this state, because the price, the cost of our energy is so high, if we can take pilot projects here and make them work in Alaska. They can work anywhere. So I have been working with Department of Energy, had the new energy secretary up to the state a few weeks back, and sat and talked to him a long time about how we can take some of these just more revolutionary concepts, because they are still revolutionary. They haven't penciled out yet, and make them work here in Alaska so that they can then transport our technology that we have developed and enhanced here. But you look in certain areas. I know out in Kotzebue, with the wind generation that you have there, I think it's about 11% of your energy that you are generating right there out of wind, with the potential to go up to 20%. And when you are a community that is absolutely 100% diesel-based, we've got to have this focus. Now, this is one of the reasons why we've got to get a comprehensive energy policy through the Congress, because it's in that legislation that we see the incentives for the renewables, for the alternatives, as well as for the conservation. That's the other side of it. And I do apologize, because we do get focused on pushing the oil and the gas and the hard stuff in the ground. But we need to recognize that the potential is so vast here that we need to capitalize it on. Thanks for bringing it up.
Representative Gruenberg, and then Senator Terrio.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, Senator Murkowski, I was really pleased that you got on the Foreign Relations Committee. When I was on staff back on the Hill about 30 years ago, my recollection of dealing with the Department of State was that department felt itself very much above and immune from congressional control. And they have very bright people, very knowledgeable, very competent. But they consider their clients the other countries, not the United States. That was the term they used. If they were working in Africa, their client would be Nigeria or whoever. Are you going to be able, and is Congress going to be able, to keep some closer control over that particular department?
Well, I can't promise you that I will be able to keep anybody in check. But I will tell you, you know, it's you got to deal with them. You got to ask them the questions and put them on the spot. Your comment about them being somewhat separated is probably still a true statement, even from the years since you have been beyond that circle. The folks that represent us in the Department of State are there in, you know, they're in an emissary capacity, if you will. But when you talk about your clients are us. Clients are this country. And we've got some good people in the Department of State, some very, very bright people. And I think our job is just to make sure that they continue to represent us and put us first. That's our job, to kind of monitor it and keep on top of it. But we've had some interesting conversations so far. It's those ones that are off the floor that are probably more interesting than the ones that are on the C-SPAN.
Senator Terrio?
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, I had the privilege of being back in D.C. with Representative Samuels when Mark Meyer spoke to the Senate Energy Commission or Committee with regards to the gas hydrates in Alaska, taking the step to reauthorize the act and put money behind it. Just read recently in Gas Daily that the gas hydrate potential in the Gulf of Mexico, they think there's some particular problems there and might not be as much promise there. But we've been drilling through gas hydrates up in the North Slope for 30 years. We know they're there. We're able to map them. Can you tell us, is there any movement with regard to reauthorizing the act, number one, and putting the money behind it so we can go from the laboratory to the field?
That act is due to expire this year. I've been working with Senator Akaka from Hawaii to reauthorize that for another 5 years. We have completed the draft legislation. We were actually ready to drop it on the Friday before we adjourned, but we've got rules in the Senate that say that you can't file a bill unless the Senate is actually in session. So we will probably be filing that on Tuesday when we get back. There's that front, the legislation. We're also including working with Chairman Domenici on the Energy Committee to put a focus on the gas hydrates and those projects that can further the research, the commercialization of our gas hydrates. So we're working that angle as well. The whole issue of gas hydrates is one that really is gaining some momentum. Senator Stevens brought Mark Myers back to D.C. Several weeks ago to give a presentation to the Senate on the potential in Alaska as it relates to the gas hydrates. And there is a great deal more awareness of what we have here, not only in Alaska, but in waters around the country. And so even though the Gulf might not be what we want it to be, we recognize that the potential is there. But again, as with so much, if you can't figure out a way to get to it, it doesn't do us much good. So I'm very hopeful that our legislation will move without a hitch.
Thank you. We got next Representative Guerra and Capsman and Samuels.
Thank you. Welcome, Senator, and I will send warm regards from your neighbors in Government Hill. They still think of you very fondly, and your shoes have been hard to fill. So,
there's take care of them.
I'm trying. There's one concern that they do have, and that's become quite relevant. And I'm just going to ask that maybe you look into it as much as you can. The Kinnickarm crossing. There was hope early on that a number of possible alternative routes would be considered for the road that leads to the launching point for the crossing and then across the inlet. And right now, the only proposals that are seriously being considered are ones that go through your neighborhood and the neighborhood that I represent, Government Hill. There's a proposal that goes that builds a tunnel through Government Hill that goes over Government Hill that goes that might require a fair amount of condemnation or other things that are equally as bad. The Kibata Board, the Kinnickarm Crossing Board, don't feel that they have the ability to negotiate an alternative route through Fort Rich, north of Government Hill, without some cooperation on the federal side. And I'm hoping that you can consider discussing with Representative Young or others and folks on Fort Rich the possibility of building a northern access point to the Kinnickarm crossing through Fort Rich. There are some off-the-record comments from folks within the military who say it could be done without compromising national security, though on the record they're maybe less willing to say that. And we're hoping that maybe at your office you might be able to approach this subject with folks at Fort Rich and maybe with our representative. There are ways that this Kinnickarm crossing can be built to create a new neighborhood on the other side of the inlet without compromising a neighborhood that already exists. And I think there's a win-win situation to do the project.
But I appreciate that, and I appreciate your involvement in it. This is something that we've got to recognize. This is more than just a bridge across the water. It's got to tie in on both ends, and it has to tie in a way that works. And I know that those of you in the valley are concerned about what happens on the other side. So when we talk about funding for a Kinnickarm crossing and the opportunity to open up that area, we do look at it with promise, but we also have to recognize that it's not going to do anybody any good to have that corridor if people aren't going to come across the water, because once they hit the anchorage side, they're so snarled up in traffic going through the port, going through a neighborhood, and going into downtown Anchorage. There has to be the planning on both ends of the bridge. It just can't be the concrete across the water. So this is something that, believe me, I'm taking a very personal interest in it. We'll continue to do so. We've got to have a project that makes sense. And there are opportunities to the north. I do understand the military's hesitancy, but I do think that we need to look at how you make the best project. And the best project extends beyond the bridge on the water. So we've got to be working it. So we'll be talking.
Senator Representative Capsner.
Mr. President, welcome back, Senator Murkowski. I just wanted to take the opportunity to invite you to Barrow in 2006 on behalf of myself and the representative from District 40 for the Inuit Circumpolar Conference. This is a group of people who get together every 4 years, I believe, to talk about Arctic issues. And in previous years, when Greenland has hosted it, when Canada has hosted it, They've really exhibited impressive hospitality, and we would like to be able to exhibit the same kind of hospitality in Alaska, and would like to invite you and your fellow members of the Foreign Affairs Committee to help us do that.
Thank you. I will commit to it in advance. I am serving on the Arctic Parliamentarian Council and had an opportunity to meet with the other members of the council just about 3-4 weeks ago. And we talked about the Circumpolar Conference. We also talked about the fact that we've got the International Polar Year coming up and Alaska's role in that, and the conference, the focus that we will have on health care in Arctic nations. This is something where I can really get charged up about my position on the Foreign Relations Committee. Nobody's ever talked about the Arctic. I had Condoleezza Rice came to my office before the confirmation hearings for one of those get acquainted meetings, and I said, well, tell me about what we can do with the Arctic. And she really didn't have much to say. So when her confirmation hearings came up, I asked her about the opportunities for greater cooperation in the Arctic, and she had a much better response. By the time the Deputy Secretary Zelik came up for his meeting with me, he brought it up with me. So you talk about, you know, what's going on within the State Department. There was a level of not only awareness, but, oh, she's actually going to be paying attention to this issue. Maybe we better bone up on it. There are great opportunities for us in Alaska to take a leadership role for the country. We're the only Arctic state. I kind of view us as an Arctic country every now and again. But we should be taking the lead on this. So for all of you who are involved in, whether it's the Circumpolar Conference or any of the conferences that we have, we need to make sure that the appropriate invitations go out. So I look forward to that one.
Representative Samuels, then we'll finish up with Senator Davis.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you for coming, Senator. Just like the old rock and roll band, Lynyrd Skynyrd had to play Freebird in every concert, you have to talk about Anwar in every speech. So I don't want to beat a dead horse here with the question, but and before I get to the question, I think I was one of those in my office that refused to come to session until we watched the vote, and on behalf of, I think, probably all of us, you did an excellent job. Win or lose, we think that you did an excellent job during that debate. And as we go down the road now, is there anything that individual Alaskans, Alaskan businesses, the legislature can do to make sure that the train stays on the track regarding the budget going through the process right now and making sure that Anwar stays in it? Sometimes we want to help and we probably hurt, to be perfectly honest. Is there anything that my constituents can do or we can do as a body to try to make sure that we help you get to the goal?
That's a good question, and I think there are a couple things that ordinary, everyday Alaskans can do. You can show your support, and it's no different in Washington, D.C. than it is here. You get POMs, you get the telephone calls for or against an issue, and Alaskans speaking up on this issue and saying, this is important to us. We can do a good job. We can responsibly develop up in the 1002 area, and again, kind of the simple thank you to those that have stood with Alaska on this issue. In terms of the budget process and where we are, quite honestly, the politics of that, we don't know what to anticipate from day to day and what is going to be thrown in the way to derail this. We'll just have to continue that. But in talking with people, for instance, Senator Martinez from Florida, it's the first time he had an opportunity to vote on Anwar. He says, Lisa, I understand the issue. I understand it very, very clearly. My constituents clearly don't. And he said, I'm with you on this, but you need to understand the pressures that I am under. He had editorials in every single paper in Florida blasting him before he'd even taken a vote. And they were trying to kind of erode his confidence in where he wanted to go with it. And the concern that was being presented was, if we start in Anwar, the next thing you know, we're going to be drilling in Florida's blue waters. And that's not what the argument is about. People like Senator Martinez needed to be reminded that this was an issue that Alaskans, for the most part, supported. They were prepared to accept the responsibility of responsible development and
that's kind of where he came down. He says, if Alaskans are supportive, I can be supportive of them. So we need to show that support. And you need to recognize, I said, this tournament's not over. There will be probably four more opportunities, maybe three or four more opportunities, where those opposed to opening the 1002 area will attempt to strip that from, whether it's the energy legislation, whether it's the reconciliation through conference. And so these people need to be shored up every step of the way.
Thank you. I read a miscue from Senator Davis. It was my mistake. So I think we appreciate your insight, and thank you for coming, and thank you for your dedication.
You bet. You bet. Thank you. Thank you, guys.
President, I move and ask unanimous consent that this adjourned session stand in adjournment.
Without objection, the joint session is adjourned.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the House stand adjournment until 10 a.m. Friday, April 1st.
Without objection, the House will be adjourned until 10 a.m. Friday, April 1st.